All right. So this is what we call the afterburn. So this is where we allow time so we can interact with each other and make sure that whatever I just shared was received, hopefully in the way I hoped it would be. And so this is where you can share your thoughts, your questions, and we'll have some comments, and maybe I'll get some answers to those questions, etc. So if you're on a live stream, you can start typing those things in, and our Shamash team in the back will take care of that. And we'll begin up here up front with Mr. Craig Lane.
So set apart, would set apart be the same as dedicated?
It is a form of that. Okay, because like when I did the definition, it's consecrated, declared sacred, or dedicated. Absolutely.
So we often think of that as a good thing, something to strive for. I think a lot of our goals are that. But I think a lot of us maybe don't realize, like Sodom and Gomorrah were dedicated, right? They're set apart as to that use, like they could never be used for anything else again. Are we ready to have that type of dedication? Like all the people that we read about dying from plagues, they're really quite set apart. They're never be used for anything other than what we gain from their stories again and other things of what Yah's description. I think it's often a lot heavier. I think I've heard you say, we're all going to drink from the cup that our Messiah drank from.
Amen. Amen. Thank you for sharing that. Absolutely. All right, Mr. Shamash Steve.
Okay. In 6:14, it said, stand then having gird your waist. So to me, girding is preparing beforehand, because if you're not prepared beforehand, you're not going to be able to handle the situation. So you can ask yourselves, are we addressing the matters in order to be prepared, or are we allowing the circumstances to lead? And Elder Billy posted something in his little chat thing. He said, excuses make today easy, but make tomorrow hard. And discipline makes today hard, but makes tomorrow easy. So isn't being girded daily a discipline thing, or walking out the Torah is a discipline in our lives that we need to strengthen rather than just kind of have a nonchalant attitude about?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, and I was going to make a joke that it says stand and then having girded, because I don't think you could gird sitting down or lying down. It'd be a little tough to do that. But the thing is, when you talk about these things, anything you do that is challenging at first, if you do it often enough, it becomes easier. I think that's not the right words. It doesn't take a lot of thought or effort in the morning for me to put my tzitzit on. But in the beginning it did. I had to think about it. I had to remember to put them on. Now I don't know. It's like I put my socks on, right? I put my shoes on, I put my tzitzit on. I mean, it's just, I get dressed. It's part of my getting dressed. Same thing with the armor. It would be like girding and putting on the breastplate and the other parts we're going to talk about. So you would do these things. But in the beginning, you have to think about it. But then you start doing it as a part of just being. Okay? So I don't just put them on not aware what they are. I just, without having to think, I never have to worry that I'm going to go and leave the house without my tzitzit on. Because it's part of what I do every day as part of my routine. Okay, I'm gonna get up, I'm gonna wash my face, or maybe shower, whatever, I'm gonna brush my teeth, I'm gonna eat. There are things that you do as a routine. But when you're doing something for the first time and it's not routine, you gotta think about it a lot. And when you think about it a lot, it's a lot tougher to do, and it takes discipline to change all that. It takes discipline. All right, thank you, Steve. Okay, Taylor.
I was taking notes and I might have missed it, but if you could clarify for me. When you mentioned the verse, everyone saying in him does not sin, I remember in a Q&A that you said that that it was possible for a man to be perfect or reach a level of perfection if they try really, really hard. And I was wondering, I know you explained how one verse doesn't contradict this one, everyone saying him does not sin. I forgot what it was though. But how does that relate to this when you said in the Q&A, if you remember, that a man, like, if he did try to reach the perfection of Yeshua, am I mixing it?
No, look, in the Jewish tradition of understanding things, there's what we would call a tzaddik, Okay, and a tzaddik would be a righteous one. And a tzaddik is someone that they would say has overcome and does not have any challenges, what's called the Yetzer Hara. Okay, and the Yetzer Hara is the evil desire or evil inclination. And so you can be perfect. Mechanics are not tough. It's the inclination to do other things that's tough. Okay, so Taylor, it's not, there's nothing in Torah that's tough to do, mechanically, except that I desire something that goes against it every now and then, or I desire not to do something he wants me to do, and it's that evil inclination, evil meaning it doesn't match with him and it causes harm and all these other things that we talked about in the evil teaching. And so if you could become a tzaddik and overcome the evil inclination, you would have no problem with the mechanics. The problem is the maturing and growing, which is why Yeshua started the blessed ours with all these things that have to do with getting our inclinations right. That internal drive to be compassionate and meek and hungering and thirsting for righteousness. We hunger and thirst for lots of things. It's not always righteousness. Some of those things are the Yetzer Hara, things that we shouldn't be doing, okay? So we're striving to get to that level. You know, there are those that claim that Job may have been that way. We have things like Noah would have been that way. There are people that we point to and we see that they were righteous in their generations. Okay, when Hasatan wanted to go and deal with Job, he said, well, you know, he's a tzaddik. What do you want me to do? He's got nothing to work with. Of course, he used the excuse, well, the reason he has nothing to work with is because you spoil him, Yahweh. He says, you give him everything, and so of course he acts all perfect. Well, no. A lot of people were spoiled in the Bible and didn't act so perfect. Okay, but he had a different inclination. And that's the part that we need to really develop, right? Okay? All right, Janet.
Thank you, Rabbi. That, I was going to go there, actually, with my question. So you were looking at 1 John 3:10, I think it is, where it says, in this, the children of Elohim and the children of the devil are manifest. Everyone not doing righteousness is not of Elohim, neither the one loving his, not loving his brother. And then there was another part where he's also talking about that when it says, I think it's 1 John 3, verse 10.
And that's where you just were.
Yeah, but there's another one. There was in two places where he mentioned it. But when it said love...
Well, it was 1 John 2:10.
Yes, yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So when it says loving his brother, is this connected to the Beatitudes that you were reading? Like those are the skills that will
those
show?
Those are some of them. Those are some of them. Look, I cover this in darkness and light because I know we covered this. Because it says the one who hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness. It says the one who says he's in the light and hates his brother is in the darkness. Okay, the one who loves his brother stays in the light. So I if you want to get this, go back in the darkness and light. I know I covered it there. Okay?
And then I had one more question, which went to John 1:12. So it says, but as many has received him, to them he gave them the authority to become children of Elohim. So the authority, is that what you're always teaching about, like the name, the reputation? His reputation is what makes us children.
Right. So authority, it's almost, think of it like he gave them permission. He said, okay, you can be my children. He says, you received me, you can be my children. All right? You believe in my authority, I will publicly claim you as my children.
Okay, good. Okay? Yeah. Thank you so much. And then one last one. You were talking about how the works is what protect us, the righteousness. You were talking about the armor of Elohim. So the protection is against sinning. Because if we're focusing on the righteousness of Torah, then we're protected from sin and from the curses that come from sin. Or what is the protection about?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, look, the armor, he talks about sin, but he also talks about people leading you astray, which means that leads you into sin. And so all of this is to protect you against not staying in him, not staying a child of Elohim. Like he says, those who are in him don't sin. All right, so The armor is to help keep you from going out. All right? Hopefully that makes sense there. Look, if you're in the middle of a battle and you're not well armored, what are you going to do? You're going to run. You're going to go somewhere else. You may even join the other side. Anything to stay alive. But if you're well armored, you're ready there to stand and fight. And so that's what is protecting you. It's not protecting you from, it's protecting you so you can stand. Okay? It's not a shield, it's not like we put a fortress around you. He said, you're wearing armor. You're going to have to fight. But don't worry about it. You're well armored. Okay? And you're going to have a good weapon, too. Because we're going to talk about that eventually, right? The sword. So you're ready for battle. Because if you weren't armored and well armed on top of it, you would either run, give in, quit, or go to the other side. Okay, Chris?
Like even if you have all the armor on but you're missing a breastplate, you're pretty much toast as far as like not keeping Torah, even if you have all like belief and other.
Yeah, if you have all of those things without the breastplate, you're, the part that will kill you is exposed, right? The place that's easiest to kill you is exposed. So the breastplate has to cover the heart, which has to be the righteousness, has to be connected again to the mind and heart, which is those desires and things have to be focused on righteousness.
Okay, so I was, when you were talking about Job being a righteous one, there's one verse that confuses me in Job chapter 32, in verse 1, about the three men who he's talking to. Then these three men ceased to answer Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. So I want to know, like, if that was because they thought that he was righteous in his own eyes or if he actually was. That's my first question.
All right. No, you had it right the first time. They thought that. Okay. These are his good friends who are really not good friends. But friends like these. All right. So, no. All right. Because these, you know, they were constantly giving him all kinds of grief. And so their conclusion was that he was righteous in his own eyes. Okay.
Okay, that makes more sense.
That was their conclusion, not his conclusion.
My other question was in Mark 9, what it connects to the salt. So it talks about the salt becoming tasteless. So in Mark 9, verse 49, for everyone shall be seasoned with fire, every offering shall be seasoned with salt. Salt is good, but if the salt becomes tasteless, how shall you season it? Have salt in yourselves and at peace, be at peace among one another. And so in Matthew, it was talking about salt being tasteless. But in Mark, it talks more about, in the verses before that, fire and being seasoned with fire, and then also being salt in yourselves. So I wanted to know more about what that's connected to, if there's like a deeper understanding of it.
Say one more time, the last part. So in Mark...
In Mark 9, 49, 50. Because it says it differently.
Mark. What chapter again?
9.
And there's 49 and 50.
Yes.
Okay, so for everyone shall be seasoned with fire, and every offering shall be seasoned with salt. Salt is good, but if the salt becomes tasteless, how shall it season? Have salt in yourselves, and be at peace among others. It fits exactly perfectly to what I said. Okay, in other words, you have a purpose, like salt has a purpose. Okay? He says, so have the salt in yourselves. So did you, in other words, have that purpose in yourselves and be at peace among one another. He said, he says salt is good, but if the salt becomes tasteless, in other words, if you're not using it, you're no longer doing the purpose that it, then there's no point. How can you season anything? It's the same idea. Saying that salt has a purpose. What if you had salt that didn't do anything? Then it would be garbage. It'd just be like sand. It'd just be this stuff that has a similar texture to sand, and you just, what would you want it for? Okay? Same thing with you. If you are not properly salted, salt also points to covenant, right? So that you're covenanted, because it says we have a covenant of salt with our Elohim. So if you're properly salted, he says, then you will be able to do all these things. Okay, but if you become useless, like salt that has no flavor is useless.
So in verse 49, would it be like kind of we're seasoned with fire as in like going through trials and becoming salted or becoming, is this all activated with fire?
Well, no, look, this goes back also to the Levitical temple offerings, okay? The offerings with fire and how they would need it to be salt, okay? This all goes back to that kind of thing also, the idea of the offerings. But this connection is, again, everyone's going to be seasoned with fire, whatever season means. I have it circled in my book. I don't know why. Either my wife circled it when she used my scripture one day. Okay, but everyone shall be... Oh, I know what it was. It's crossed out. Maybe the word seasoned is not actually in the scriptures. It's actually an added word. So everyone shall be with fire, and every offering shall be with salt. Okay? In other words, you're going to be, and so many other verses cover this, the idea of going through fiery trials and the fire, how it purifies. Okay, you have a teaching, baptism of fire, that explains that. All right, it's not about speaking in tongues or some other thing. It's about what it really means to be baptized in fire. And when he says that there are those that will have the baptism of water, the baptism of spirit, and the baptism of fire, and what those things represent. Okay, John?
Rabbi, I have a question about some of the things you said about the devil being in this building that you would think is Yahweh. I know when I was in a Christian viewpoint, I read the scriptures, and somewhere in Matthew it says, as you see Yeshua going up, he shall come back the same way, and made me think, because of that, if he's walking on this earth before he comes, he's not Yeshua, but the devil himself. Is that correct point of view?
I can see where that could play out. I don't yet know how this is all going to play out to confuse that even the elect could be confused, but we'll have to see how it plays out. Okay?
I was just trying to figure it out because of my mind.
I understand. There's definitely, a lot going on there that could play out. We just, we're speculating, and it will do whatever it does, and we just have to be prepared and ready and armored up so we don't get fooled. Okay?
Because I know in the Christian point of view, that's how they were telling us to tell between Hospitan and Yahweh.
All right. Did you go back and watch Beware False Prophets? And that'll be the indicator you're looking for.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Because the false one is coming. And I talk a lot about that in that teaching. Okay. Linda.
The salt in Matthew 5:13, it says, you're the salt of the earth, but if the salt becomes tasteless, how shall it be seasoned? And the next sentence is what I wanted to ask about. For it's no longer of any use but to be thrown out and be trodden down by men. And a few years ago, I read an article that said at that time that we know they used salt for the sacrifices, but it said they also used the old salt to soak up the blood, and then they would just put it out on the streets, and kind of like we do for ice. And I just wondered if you'd read anything about that.
No, I'm not. I'm not familiar with that. It's certainly possible. I'm not familiar with
trodden down. Trodden down by men. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
All right, Pete.
Shalom, Rabbi. So at the outset of this teaching, you talked about that you had to put on the armor of Elohim because you're under attack and you have to protect yourself. And that took me to Isaiah 59 in verse 15. The verse says, whoever turns away from evil makes himself a prey. And then further down in the chapter, it talks about he put on righteousness as a breastplate. So we protect ourselves from evil, protect ourselves from being a prey by doing righteousness. But it's the very act of doing righteousness that oftentimes makes us a prey. It's because we are acting set apart. So it seems to be a continual cycle that it's never going to end. As long as you are doing righteousness, you're going to be a target. You're going to have a target on your back. And the only way for you to get through it is to keep your eyes on the prize, so to speak, and stay on the path. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would correct one thing of saying that you're not wearing the armor because you're being attacked. You're wearing the armor because you're going to be attacked. You may also be being attacked. What I'm just saying is, just because you have the armor on, it's not because you're being attacked. You're not going to be attacked all the time. But if you're not armored up, see, the enemy will let you have this quiet time, and then you may forget to put your armor on. See, if you're always under attack, you need to keep your armor on. That's a whole different thing. He'll give you some peace for a few minutes, so you might get complacent and lackadaisical and just sort of slacken your, you know, your vigilance, and then next thing you know, you're in trouble. All right, Brian?
So I really do appreciate all the teachings, but especially today when you were discussing some of the things that the church teaches and things like that, and I loved the way that you described, especially when they're teaching to break or teaching that the Son died so that we could sin and how that's just stupid. And I know a lot of people, they kind of have like an irky feeling when the when that type of language is used, but it's perfect for me because that's exactly what Scripture says. When you're receiving reproof from somebody that's in a position of authority, it tells us that in Proverbs chapter 12, verse 1, whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. So it's completely scriptural, and I just love the way that whenever you align yourself with somebody of authority and you choose to submit, it is wise to accept reproof, because if you believe that person is anointed and appointed, that person is shaping you into somebody that Yahweh wants to live with forever. So thank you.
Amen.
Amen.
Look. Look. I could. Actually, I probably couldn't. I could. Okay, I could be a teacher, right, who stands up here like so many other teachers out there and just teaches you some things. And I could deliver that message like a teacher would teach it, okay? And I could have delivered the same exact message as a teacher without the strength of attacking certain things and hitting things a certain way. But I'm coming at you as a shepherd, as a prophet, as a someone who actually has a relationship with you, as opposed to just a person standing in front of a group who could be standing in front of any group. And so what you hear is my heart and my caring and my desire for you to not ever think to go back to where you came from, for you not to misunderstand, because some people, especially if you're new, and some of you may not know this because maybe you never had the experience, maybe you all did and you got past it, but some people get tempted to go back because they find it too hard to be always attacked by their family and their friends. They're tempted to go back because it would be the easier path socially and relationally with all the people that they know. And so I have to make sure that I've hit that. And by the way, you have scripture that does the same thing, where he says so many times about you do not want to go back to Egypt. You do not need to go back that way. You do not need to think that way. And so the delivery style, okay, is not for entertainment. Oh, yes, every now and then I'll say something just to make sure I haven't whacked you so hard that you're not going to laugh a little bit. But I do that just to lighten it up for a moment so you can handle the next barrage. All right? I'm not being funny either, okay? Because I know that it's coming at you. And you know, when I listen to a lot of other people, and I don't get to listen to myself very much. And, you know, my wife last night when we were watching, you know, we were going to watch a teaching that she had missed one of the teachings during the feast because she was working and teaching the children, right? And in charge doing that. And so she was playing one of the, actually it was the one I did on the Holy Day, which is two parts ago from this. And I was listening to the way I was just like, I was thinking, I don't hear other people teach with that intensity. And it comes from the feeling I have and the caring I have for you, okay? I could just share the information and say, well, look, this is the armor and, you know, you're supposed to be set apart and it's about rights. But I need you to get it or you're not going to get in. And like I've said a million times, my only heart thought is that you get in. And I don't care if you don't like me when you get in. I don't care if you, but I need you to get in. I want to make sure I've done my job to tell you everything and encourage you and smack you as hard as is necessary that you make the changes so that you get in. All right? And some people don't like that because you're not mature enough to handle those things yet. You're still in the me stuff. And that's the baby stuff, which is why you can't handle correction. And I'm telling you, the problem throughout Scripture, other than the obvious battle between, you know, doing things the worldly way and Hasatan, et cetera, versus Elohim's way, is the inability to be corrected or to handle correction. As Brian pointed out, there's a right approach to correction. Every marriage that I deal with that has problems with correction. Either correction from me or correction from the husband for the wife or whatever is necessary. Child rearing, all of the problems is people that can't take correction. All right? They will not take correction. You cannot instruct them. Okay, so all of these things, it's an epidemic viral problem that's been since day one of creation, almost. Okay, not day one, but since man existed. Since, you know, from the first days of man, there's been a problem with correction. And you can see it from the very first correction, because Yahweh said, well, blah, 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 and Adam goes, oh, well, the woman. He didn't own it, he pointed. And then she did the same thing, because there was a problem with handling correction. Well, I was embarrassed, I was ashamed, I wanted to point the finger, I wanted to blame somebody. Cain had the same problem. Blamed his brother. You made me look bad. No, you made yourself look bad. Okay? Yahweh told him, look, if you do it right, won't that be good with you? I mean, you know. And so I want to encourage all of you to understand that some of the things I'm teaching you may feel a little corrective, may feel a little harsh, may feel, I don't care what it feels like. Get past the emotion. Ask yourself, is it right? Is it true? And do I need to apply it somehow, somewhere in my life? Because some of you are experiencing the things we're talking about here right now. And I don't give you teachings because I think you're going to use them maybe once in your life sometime down the road. I think you could use it today, okay, or this week. You're going to need this like now. And so I try to make all the teachings, all 600 of them, to be like that, okay? I mean, I'm not going to sit here and do teachings that all you go, man, that was really interesting. Not interested in interesting. I'm interested in, will it help you become him? And hear the words, you can enter into the kingdom. Well done, okay? Because I, after watching what, you know, the playback of the teaching I did and some other teachers that I put on just to see what they were doing, I there was such a lack of intensity, a lack of, you know, of emotional, I mean, a proper emotional trying to exhort, etc. I would just be bored. I wouldn't feel anything. It wouldn't be reaching in and grabbing me. I mean, I'm trying to reach across and literally grab you and say, listen, it's okay. And so that's why I can get pretty loud. Okay, and so, you know, and I know the sound guy's like, man, he's like blasting. I'm not even getting remotely as loud as I get. That's just for here. Okay. But I try to just get that point. I want to make sure all the noise in your head cannot play louder than what I just gave you. But some of you will sit here and your mind will wander and you'll get all distracted, and I'm just going to blast right through all that and say, grab a hold of your brain and say, pay attention. Yahweh's talking to you through this man, through this word. Wake up, pay attention. All right, amen? All right. All right, Deirdre.
First of all, I just want to say I appreciate your passion. Thank you. And because it gets to where I need to, it gets me to where I need to go. And I also appreciate the comedy because it's my coping mechanism. So, Matthew 5, verse 16. Let your light so shine before men so that they see your good works. So if I'm trying to, I don't know, I picture like the formula in my head. And if I'm understanding correctly, it's good works equals Torah observance plus the Beatitudes plus belief? Or am I completely off? Is my math wrong?
No, your math's not wrong, though the Beatitudes are not happening without belief. Okay.
Okay.
The mechanics can happen without belief. Well, without some level of belief, because you just believe that doing it mechanically is going to do something, so there is still belief there, okay? But doing it out of fear, as in like I'm afraid of death or something, it's not the same as doing it out of love, out of trust, out of that emunah, that belief that this is his desire and it's what he wants me to become, etc. It's a whole different level.
Do you need the Beatitudes to do it out of love?
No, they're just, the Beatitudes are a manifestation of that internal change.
Okay.
Okay, you can't choose to be poor in spirit, to mourn and be meek. You have to become these things.
Does one have to, do the Beatitudes have to come first, or does the Torah observance have to come first, or the belief, or it doesn't really matter?
Okay, so we go back to Deuteronomy 10:12, which gives you the order. You start by fearing him, which is our reverence and respect. Then you do the Torah observance, which is walking in all his ways. Then the emotional side comes in where you fall in love with him because you realize how much he loves you. Then you start to get this other stuff on top of that. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
All right? But understand, you're not going to be poor in spirit because of a mechanical decision. You have to become that. You have to become one who mourns. You have to become one who's meek. You have to become hungry and thirsty. You can't just decide, I'm going to hunger and thirst. No, you have to be hungry and thirsty. Okay? You have to be compassionate. It's a state of being. Okay? So it's the state of being connected then with the mechanics. So the state of being includes Galatians 5, which is the love, joy, peace, patience, the fruit of the Spirit. Those are states of being. I have to be loving and joyful and patient and kind and all that stuff, right? Being those things while observing, keeping, and guarding commandments is the formula. That's what makes that wholeness. Okay, Brandy.
First, thank you so much. Oh, my goodness. I was, confession, the evangelizing Christian that was outside of restaurants, not turn or burn, but using the verse of exceeding the Pharisees, you'll never get in. Like, I raised my hand when you asked who heard that. I was the one telling that, and fervent, oh, my gosh, passionate about it. And still have, I just today had that verse clarified for me. So thank you so much. You know, I thought I could do this from Texas, and I was like, I can listen to him from there. But you will get sucked back in. You can. It's important to be around. Even just having this Tuesdays and Saturdays isn't enough, because the noise in your head, and every week the noise in my head questions, is he anointed, appointed? I realize that I'm not just here for hearing you and living this out with like-minded believers, but you are continually smacking that very loud evangelizing Christian in me. And so I thank you so much, because everything you taught today, I questioned and went through this past week. And
Amen.
The red/blue/whatever in me is constantly like questioning, I guess. And you don't let yourself be fooled again. You were fooled once. Don't do it again. And so I'm constantly praying every day. If he's still my anointed appointed or a anointed appointed, I need you to reveal it to me. I need you to reveal it to me, because I'm just still guarded big time. And not realizing that I have so much of that old stuff to smack down. And just this teaching just kind of solidified, you have the mechanics. You got to work on this other stuff you're denying. So with that being said, too, I wanted you to, if you could explain, you might have to thin this question out because it's hard for me to put together. But when you have an internal trigger versus a response to your surrounding environment, whether it be someone in the body, outside of the body, or whatever situation where you have that armor that you're supposed to be ready for, how do you identify? Because one thing I used to do is be like, I'm angry at this person who's saying they're going back under the law because I have righteous anger. I should be able to have righteous anger for J-Man, you know? But when you have a situation where someone or something, or it's a situation versus that spiritual internal guarding, how can you, does that make sense? How do you determine the difference between it? Like, nope, that's just an emotional issue you need to get over. Or yes, you have the internal feeling, because I know you're not going to walk around in peace and, you know, oh, all the time. You're going to, some things are going to trigger you. Does that question make sense?
Well, I think I know what you're getting at. Okay, so look, there's going to be those moments where whatever you're experiencing, whatever's happening and it's triggering, where you can have inside a certain quote-unquote righteous indignation that you're not going someplace, not directed towards the other person. We have to be careful when the emotion is triggering us to think something about the other person who's not bubble popped, wherever the confusion is, and allow them that space, and don't you then jump in that judgment where now you're allowing them to trigger you about them. It may trigger something in you where you say, oh no, I'm not going in that direction. I'm not going to believe that. I'm not going to own that. That's where your own inside battle can be won that way. But it's an emotional challenge, though, if you start directing it towards that person. Okay, so you don't want to allow it to push you in a direction where now I'm mad at them. I'm going to fight with them. I have indignation against them. They're just a confused person who's talking to you. And they think they're right, and they think that they were taught right, and they're just trying to, they think they're fixing your problem. Okay.
So putting on the armor, then, is it more geared towards not being led astray, or like, you know, agreeing with that person, I guess, and going with them? I guess I'm trying to.
Okay, good question. And I wish I had said this. I'm going to have to write this down at the top here. Whoop, I'm going to write this on here. Well, I'll explain why it's a good question in a second. Because Janet was like, "What was that?" she said.
I'm sorry.
Okay. So she was asking about the armor, what that really is for, and how that, you know, as far as where the battle is. The armor is for the battlefield of the mind and the heart. The armor is not for you to fight the other person. Okay? The armor is to protect you from whatever they're doing affecting you.
Okay.
Okay?
So can you add the fire?
Because the people outside, they can hit you, they can beat you up, they can scourge you, they can kill you, who cares? It's really not a big deal in the big picture, as scripture tells us. The bigger problem is if they beat on you and everything else, and it affects you to change in a direction you shouldn't go. So the armor is there to help you fight the battle inside you and protect you from outside the world that you're in but not of, but protect you from becoming of instead of just in. Did that answer it?
Yes. Thank you. Can you add one more thing? Can you relate it to the fiery arrows verse for me?
The fiery arrow verse.
I just feel like, you know, I know you didn't go over it, but if I have on armor, fire arrows, I'm totally relating it, praying that you just answer this question.
No problem. Okay, so the fiery arrows is verse 16, and we are still in verse 14. So we're going to get there. Okay? Because that's when we talk about, we still have to talk about fitting our feet and then the shield of belief. Okay? So the fire arrows are going to have to deal with the shield. So we'll cover that. That's what I told you. We'll also deal with James, etc. Okay? So right now we still have to finish righteousness, which I have a couple of more things to say about. And then we're going to deal with briefly this idea of fitting your feet with the preparation of the good news of peace, and then we're going to deal with the shield, okay? Then after the shield, we're going to deal with the helmet of deliverance and then the sword of the spirit, and then we'll have completed the armor, okay? So we're going to get there. You're just wanting to jump ahead a little bit. But we are going to finish out the whole chapter 6, so we will not miss anything, I promise. All right, Rick.
Yes, I stumbled onto something. I can't find the exact verse.
Did you hurt yourself when you fell? No, sorry. Okay.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
That's good. Don't waste anything. There was a verse I found when you were speaking a lot about righteousness and being perfect. And I can't find that exact verse, but Hebrews 12:23 talks about the entire gathering assembly of the firstborn, having been enrolled in heaven to Elohim, the judge of all, and to the spirits of righteous men made perfect. So it seems in the other verse I read that I can't find, seems to infer that in order for us to be made, we're made perfect by Elohim, but only if we're striving to be righteous. Is that correct, or can you expand on that?
I'd have to go back and refresh myself with Hebrews 12 there. But the thing is, the potter, the master potter, you're the clay, he uses the submission to his Torah to make you, to mold you, because it's a transformation vehicle, right? When I talk about the Torah doing three things, the third thing is it's the transformation vehicle. It transforms you from you to him. And so in that case, it's making you. And so when it talks about to the spirits of righteous men, the spirits of righteous men made perfect, well, then we're made perfect by being righteous. But righteous in the fullness that I talked about today with the Beatitudes and the fruit of the Spirit, etc., the internal parts with the mechanics. Okay, so this makes you, like molds you, makes you perfect. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Mercy.
So you said something that was very interesting.
I'm glad I did.
Yeah. At least one thing.
At least one thing.
So Brandy mentioned it, and you answered Brandy, and that was the first time I'd ever heard that. Christianity teaches you that the armor is an external thing. So my question was originally going to be, so how do you put all this on? Because again, the Christian mindset is, you put it physically on you, even though it's a spiritual act, but you're putting on you to to protect you from the outside. But you said, the interesting thing that you said was that it is to protect you against you initially? Is that what you said?
No, it's to protect you from allowing others to influence you. So
okay.
It's protecting you from outside influences.
Right.
Influences that would cause you to step off the path.
Okay, so then...
Because if you have the truth, then anybody tries to influence you into a lie, you're protected. You have right, if you have righteous acts, then someone trying to get you to do something unrighteous, mm-hmm. you're protected, right? So it's protecting you from making... So you have the armor to make better choices or the right choices so that you don't end up off the path.
So then it's not an act of you putting it on. It's you're just... If you're living it, you're living it. So it's...
But you are putting it on. In other words, you are clothing yourself in behaviors and mindsets.
Copy.
Okay?
Okay. Okay, copy that. Thank
you. Okay, good. All right? So in other words, think about it when you wake up in the morning, and most of you probably don't do this, and you really should. But you should actually think about and choose your mindset for the day, and not just wake up and just let whatever hits you decide how you're going to feel that day. Because whoever runs into you first may actually set you off in a direction. A phone call, a text, or running into somebody, wherever it is. And then they set you on a, it's a good day, it's a bad day, it's a whatever day. All right? But instead, clothe yourself in how you're going to be behaving and you're going to be thinking and feeling by putting that on in the morning, choosing what you're going to wear. I'm going to be wearing a good attitude today. I'm going to have a great day. I'm going to keep the commandments. I'm going to make my Father in heaven proud, right? That's clothing yourself. So you're still putting that stuff on. You have to think about, I'm going to be Yeshua-like today as opposed to I'm going to just be me, right? So start your day with that intention, with that focus, and then that's actually an act of clothing yourself. Preparing. Look, when you prepare yourself to go out, what do? You wake up, you probably change your clothes, you probably wash yourself, you probably eat some food. There are things that you do before you go out and face the world. Well, what about the stuff inside, though? What about your mind, your attitude, your focus, your direction? What about feeding that and putting that on? Maybe you need to have something written out that you look at to remind yourself, okay, I'm going to clothe myself with these things today so that before I walk out of this bedroom and face the world, I'm prepared for it. Good questions. Okay, and I'm glad Brandy asked the question first and you asked the qualifier because I ended up writing on my notes that next time when we start the next teaching, I'm going to remind us when I talk about, well, remind us why we're wearing the armor is because we have to fight the battlefield of self in the mind so that outside does not affect inside where we're trying to go. I shouldn't say that. Outside in the below in the earthly and the fleshly doesn't. Outside from the above is the only influence we allow in. So think of the armor as a filter. Okay? It's only going to let in what you want to let in. Okay? Think of it like a filter. That from the earthly and the fleshly and the below can't get in. It only allows in that from the above, from the heavenly, from the spiritual. See, that's why I love these Q&As, because the inspired insight of how to rephrase and repackage things always brings out new ways of seeing things, and I just love that. All right. See, we're all learning at the same time as he's giving me things to say. All right, Rob.
Okay, from Miss K, about guarding the Torah, that we should do everything within power to protect it, so it is okay to lie to other people to guard the Torah. Or I'm thinking, is it okay to lie to other people to guard the Torah, and that lying is only permissible in this regard?
Okay, I can't pretend that I really understand your question, but I will take a shot at it. Okay. About guarding the Torah, that we should do everything within our power to protect it. So again, it's not about protecting it. It's about protecting your keeping it. It doesn't need protecting. The Sabbath is the Sabbath, whether you keep it or not. Okay, you're guarding yourself that you keep the Sabbath, right? Okay, so that's number one. So what about lying to other people? Well, why would you lie to other people about guarding the Torah? I go to my employer. I need to have Saturday off. It's the Sabbath. Blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to make any other. It's the Sabbath. I need to have it off. I can't work. So why are we lying to people about guarding the Torah? So I'm really not sure I understand that, because that's part of your being able to stand for Yeshua, for the truth, for the Torah, for your covenant. I mean, you don't have to be obnoxious about it, right? You just have to say, I'm going to be upright. You know, there is a verse we're going to talk about where it says you need to be prepared to give an answer for why you're doing what you're doing. You know that verse. And so that's about you being able to, in truth, not in a lie, say, I can't eat that. I can't come to your Christmas dinner. I can't do this thing that you want me to do for Easter. I'm not doing an Easter egg hunt. You have to be able to stand up and say, no, we're not having a tree for Christmas. We're not doing that, right? We're not participating in these things. So I'm not sure what it is that you would lie to other people about in guarding your Torah. All right, next question.
Jamie Lawrenson, what does it mean to mourn? Matthew 5:4, I'm struggling to understand this heart attitude. And Shelly Bell is also is Rabbi in 5:4. Is the mourning in context the mourning for those not guarding Torah or those covenanted that are breaking Torah?
Neither. All right, so anybody want to know where I'm going to go to answer this question about mourning? Thank you. Who said James 4? Thank you, Chris. Good job. Okay, so let's look at James. So it's not about you mourning other people. It's about you mourning your own loss, your own problems. James 4. He says, draw near, this is verse 8, draw near to Elohim and he shall draw near to you. Cleanse hands, sinners, and cleanse the hearts, you double-minded. Lament and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to dejection. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Master and he'll lift you up. I've taught this 1,000 times. You need to understand that what it's talking about is coming into this. What's this? Covenant, the walk with Yeshua, with the Torah. All of this means the old you has to die. The old things you love has to go bye-bye. Things that you really prefer and enjoy, you don't get to have anymore. And so at some point, you may need to lament and mourn and weep that you don't get to have your shrimp cocktail or whatever it is you used to love so much, okay? Or your bacon or whatever it was, right? There's things that you just, you miss. I got a bunch of people who are brand new that are just struggling, giving up the Christmas and the lights and the this and the that because they loved it. They loved all that stuff and transforming their house and making it whatever. So he's saying, look, draw near to Elohim and he'll draw near to you. You got to cleanse your hands as a sinner and a double-minded and lament and mourn and weep over all that stuff that's the double-minded stuff, the stuff that's not his, that's the one mind, and the stuff that is his mind, and you got to mourn over letting go your mind stuff. Okay? So blessed are those who mourn, they'll be comforted, it says. That's the beatitude in Matthew 5. So he's saying here, if you can do this and humble yourself in the sight of the Master, he'll lift you up. He'll lift you up. Good job, Chris, on getting James 4. All right, next. I was hoping somebody would remember that. That was good.
Valerie Bordeaux says, would you say the breastplate of righteousness protects the clean heart, talked about in Psalm 51:10, so that we don't have wounds that lead to scarring and hardening our heart against Yahweh?
I would agree with most of that, except that I don't know that it's protecting the clean heart. I think it's protecting the heart so it stays clean. Okay? It's the breastplate of righteousness, so it's the breastplate of right behavior, is protecting the heart from going in a wrong direction. So with that on, your heart stays clean. So I'm not so sure if I say maybe protecting the clean heart. Well, what's Psalm 51:10 say? Let me look at that. Create in me a clean heart, O Elohim, and renew it. Okay, so this idea of creating in him a clean heart, that would be the breastplate. You do the righteousness that creates in you that clean heart and then protects it against going in a wrong direction. All right? Next.
Courtney Schober, question, what does it mean to be a peacemaker and how can we do that in our walk?
Okay, so when you interact with people, it says blessed are the peacemakers. There's the idea of when you're in any kind of a conflict with people, there's a way that you can handle it that only throws gasoline on the fire, and there's a way that you handle it that can try to pour water on the fire and calm things down. Okay? And so if you can find a way to disagree and not be so disagreeable, because the other person cannot hear you or receive if you're not doing that. okay? Now, that doesn't mean, by the way, peacemaker means that you have to make peace with everybody. It says, if possible, be at peace with all men. But sometimes it's not possible. But you want to be someone who at least is making the attempt to be a peacemaker. Okay? So it's the attempt where it's possible that you made the effort. Even where it's not possible, you can still make the effort until you figure out that it's not possible. Okay, next.
Catherine Brown, doesn't the armor of Elohim also have to do with what Rabbi spoke about during their Rosh Chodesh service, girding our minds from useless thoughts that cause anxiety and depression?
Sure. That would be included in that. Because the idea of girding the loins, and remember we talked about also girding the loins of the mind, that kind of thing, and there's other verses that talk about girding the loins of the mind. So absolutely I can go in there. I want to go back to the peacemaker thing just because another thought came to me. You know, I'll give you an example of what that could look like. Let's say you're new to this and you're married and only one of you is new to this. The other one is still in the old space, okay? Wherever that was, worldly or Christian or whatever they were, right? But you've now come into this. How you treat them, you can treat them as a peacemaker while still being meek and strong in that quiet strength of saying, there's things I'm not going to do anymore. Or you could be smacking them in the head with as a Torah terrorist, so to speak, and telling them how wrong and stupid they are and how they have to change too and everything. That's not being a peacemaker. Peacemaker is saying, honey, you probably are not going to be happy about this, but I'm going in this direction that's not the same direction I've been going in, and I don't want to disturb you with it. I don't want to make you, I'm not judging you or anything. I'm walking out my own salvation, Philippians 2:12, right? I'm walking out my own salvation in fear and trembling, and I'm no longer going to be doing these things. If you want to keep doing them, that's your thing. See, there's a way to do this. But I've had more than 100 conversations with people that when they were new, that either they were currently doing it or they learned later that it was dumb and they stopped doing it, where they had really been brutal to their spouse over these changes. I'm not just talking about the one who didn't like the changes being brutal to them. I've seen it the other way around too. Okay? And if your bubbles pop, that's great. If theirs is not, you have to treat them as a peacemaker because you can't force the bubble to pop. What you can do is just not do what you're not supposed to. So, okay, so if you're the man of the house and you say, I'm sorry, but we're not putting a tree anymore. And you can say, look, I know you love the tree and everything else. I know you're going to be mad at me, but I'm going to try and be a peacemaker, but we're not putting a tree. We're not doing this anymore. If you're the wife and the husband still wants to put a tree and you're the one that's bubble popped, you can say, sweetheart, it's your house. You can put a tree. I really would rather you didn't. But if you put a tree, I'm not going to decorate or participate in it or do anything with it. And you do that, though, in a soft enough, gentle enough, but strong enough voice that you're trying to be a peacemaker, saying, oh, look, I'm not trying to create a problem. I just can't do these things. So it's how we approach conflict, okay? Now, when I says blessed is a peacemaker, we're not talking about where you're now in a relationship where you triggered each other like you always do and married couples who fight over different things, and then, well, you're supposed to be the peacemaker. Well, you are supposed to, but you're already triggered. It's hard to get there. That's different. We're talking about when you know in advance in a situation that you're about to approaching it in a way that has the best peace result possible, okay? The most peaceful result possible, because that's something that you can think about before it happens. Okay, peacemakers are people that go into a situation with the desire to have peace. I'm not talking about when you're in the heat of a moment and you're triggered. That's really brutal. That's hard to now say you're supposed to be the peacemaker. I'm not saying you shouldn't try. I'm just saying that's not what we're talking about here, because I don't want you going home and saying to your spouse, see, I told you you need to try. That's not what I'm talking about. Okay, peacemakers are usually people that come into a situation and try to bring peace into it. Okay? And so if you know that what you're doing may cause a conflict, then you can approach it in advance. When you're in a conflict that you didn't expect to happen because you did something and then she said something or he said something and next thing you know, okay, that needs counsel and other things. That's not what we're talking about with this, okay? All right, next question.
Kayla Reich says, Rabbi, I've read that shalom is more than just the concept of peace, but one of completion. So what's the correct connection between the completeness of Torah and the completeness of shalom?
Okay, so shalom, So when he talks about wanting you to have your shalom be complete, and that's what we're going to end up when we end in the kingdom, it's going to be nothing but shalom, peace. No conflict, no strife, no anxiety, no negative emotions at all. It's an emptiness of all of the negative stuff, okay? And so, sure, you can have shalom, peace, meaning there's no actual fighting going on. But true, complete shalom means that there is complete tranquility and calm. There's no negative emotional anything. Okay? So that hopefully is a better connection. Okay, next.
Carolyn G., Matthew 5:5 says, blessed are the meek. What does that look like? Someone who waits on Yahweh, is it like what's said in Psalm 37:34? Can you please expound on this?
No, what I said before, it's a strength, okay? But it's quiet. It's not an in-your-face strength. It's not a, you know, forceful strength in terms of imposing itself. It's simply saying, I'm sorry, but I can't do that. But it's, you can feel the strength of the person saying that they're really not going to do it, okay? All right, so it's not like going over to your spouse or saying, well, you need to know that I'm not doing this stuff anymore. Instead of just saying, look, I came to this new understanding. I just want you to know I'm not doing this. Okay? And that's where the meekness comes in. Meekness is not like, being sort of a doormat and you're just this sort of soft, weak person. It's not weakness. Okay? It's meekness. And I think one of the first times I ever heard it taught this way was from Rabbi Tom. I think he was one of the first people I heard him teach meekness as quiet strength. Okay? And I thought that was perfect and beautiful. And so it's a strength that's there, but it doesn't need a loud voice. It just needs that sense when you look at the person that they mean what they say. Okay? And they don't need to be loud about it or pushy about it or argue about it or fight about it. Just, you know. Okay? Had a lady having a meltdown in the congregation after services one week many years ago. Believe it or not, over like the kids throwing a little ball around in the place we were having the oneg, and a little baby almost got hit, and one of our expensive guitars almost got knocked over. And I said, okay, we're not doing that anymore. And she started screaming at me. I don't like your decision, blah, blah, blah. And I said, I was meek though. I looked her in the face. I said, nevertheless, we're not doing this. And she yelled some more, and I smiled, and I said, that's fine, but we're not doing this. Okay? That was handling it in a meek way. I could have yelled back. I could have done any of those things. And she was screaming. Everybody in the building could hear her. She was screaming. She was yelling at the top of her lungs. She then went into one of the other rooms getting some stuff out of the kids' rooms, and she was still screaming about me. My wife walked in and said, look, you know, if my husband's anointed appointed, you may want to reconsider your words. Okay? Because attacking an anointed appointed is probably not a wise thing to do. Okay? Because she was just losing her mind over foolishness. Okay? I said, we're renting this building. We don't have permission to play ball in the building anyway. We have permission to do a service. I said, well, my kids need to be entertained. Well, then take them home and entertain them. Okay? It's not my job to entertain them or provide them with a gym to play in. But I said that with strong quiet. Okay? And so that's hopefully now it makes it more clear. Okay, do you have anything, one last, anything pressing that I can get to, or are we just going to end it now?
Probably Melissa Jones. When you talk of those that lead astray, are the ones doing it unintentionally because they don't know different, held to the same standard as those intentionally leading astray?
That's up to Yahweh how he decides that. Okay? The main thing for you is to know that there are those that, if you listen to them, it would lead you astray. So the leading astray is the result. It could be the intent. I told you that I believe that most of the time it probably is not the intent to lead astray. The result would be that you would be led astray, okay? And so my caution to you is that you who are especially should know at least a whole lot more truth than you did before, be reluctant and hesitant to just become a teacher all of a sudden, because if you intentionally or unintentionally lead astray, I'm sure that that is not going to be as good as if you didn't do that. Okay? It would be much more preferable. It would be preferable for you not to do that, right? Okay? But as far as the standards that apply, Yahweh applies his standards the way he applies his standards. I'm sure that there is a much stronger judgment on those that are doing it on purpose. Okay? All right? But the warning is that what I'm telling you, because I've warned you, that you should know better, be careful that you keep teaching if you don't know if you've gotten all of the error out of your system and you may still be perpetuating error. This is where I tell you all the time, go to the groups down the road, go to the groups in other states, go to these other groups all over the place, all over YouTube that are teaching the mixed mess. Yes, they're teaching you some Torah and some stuff that's proper about Yeshua, and the rest of it's all mainstream, whatever they learned before. That's leading people astray. Because now the people think they found truth when they're still in a mixed mess. And so I don't know how confident, I know, see, here's the thing. You get excited. You learn something. So what do you want to do? You want to share it. Just be careful sharing stuff that you learned and you may not really know enough about what you're sharing. Not to mention you're risking the embarrassment of somebody asking you a question that's more than you understood and now you don't know what to say. And then they look at you like, I thought you knew what you were talking about, but you can't answer my question. So send them to me. I can answer their question. Okay? And that just keeps you out of trouble. All right, that's going to wrap it up there. Excellent job.